Well, good morning, everyone. There's like three or ten things I'm supposed to say before I start speaking. If you haven't already gone and given a video recording of what Pauline has meant to you and your family, after church, you should go to the little Baptist or the pastor's office and put it on film. Miss Kelly set that up, and that's a good thing. And so I encourage you to go. Second is, thank you to everyone who's been praying for me for today. I have felt those prayers. And third is, my name is Heath, in case somebody doesn't know me. I'm actually really excited. I didn't think I was going to be nervous. I don't feel nervous. I feel more like excited to be up here this morning. And I have something to share with you that when Dallas asked me to speak about 5 or 10 weeks ago, he says, I need you to do this. And I said, I'll do it. And I knew exactly what I wanted to say. And just like when we have plans to say things and to do things, especially good things, like for God, like on His behalf, He's called us to do these things. There are so many ways that the devil will send an obstacle in your path to feel you, make you feel inadequate, or ashamed, or fearful, or doubtful about, no, that's not it. I can't go and do that. You know, and so I felt that way. But I've come back around. I've come back around about 3 or 4 times, and I'm going to say the thing I wanted to say. But I am a man, and I'm married, and I have children, and so I view everything through those eyes. So everything I say today, I want you to know that this message is not for you, it's for me. Like all the things that are going to be said today, these are the things that I feel. These are things that I think about. These are things that I say to myself in the mirror. The things that I think about when we sing songs like Redeemed. I mean, it has been said that in the Christian life, we are either just coming out of a fight, or we are in one, or we are moments away from going into one. And for those of us that have been in fights, external and internal, emotional, mental, physical, we know that to be true, that this life is not easy. So today I'm going to talk about fighting. But I'm going to do what Dallas asked all of us to do, to share your testimony. And I think the last time I spoke, I talked about how I was presented the gospel when I was 8 years old. And I don't remember what she said, but I know what happened. And I was rescued. And I've known that since I was 8. But 10 years ago, 2003 and 4, I was a newlywed. And I was working as a nurse, a registered nurse in the ICU, South Georgia. And I was working night shift, which night shift is tough. I don't know who's worked night shift before, but it's, yeah, you either become a zombie or a vampire, or you just become something that you're not sometimes. It's for a special person that can work nights and live during the day and all. But I was working nights, and several factors in my life, both from my childhood, from my things I had not conquered as an adult already, led me down a road of depression. And most of y'all know who me and know who I am. I that is not my baseline. I am not a depressed person, but I became something different. I would venture to say I was possessed. I was not myself. I was not thinking the way I should think. I was not living the way that God has called me to live. And in over the last 10 years, since I've come out of that, I have identified it as two things. I had a fear of missing out in life. They actually named that. This culture has named it. I think it's called FOMO, fear of missing out. And the other thing, I was fearful of being responsible. I was fearful of having children. I was scared. Like, it intimidated me. So there I was. It was in the fall of 2003. And I was married. No, couldn't have been 03. Sorry. 03, I asked her to marry me. 04, I got married. It was only 10 years ago, so it was 08 and 09. Yeah, there we are. It was 08 and 09. So I graduated nursing school. I got a job. I was working at night. It was 08 and 09. And my family knew something was wrong with me. Like, I wasn't acting like I should act. I was going down a path. I was basically like circling the drain. And thank goodness I sought the wisdom of my family, and I went and had counseling. And so I went to Valdosta, and there's a guy named Jeff. He's got long hair, and I don't know what he said, but I sat in his office, and I don't know if I said anything, but after about 6 or 10 weeks, he finally came to the conclusion, and I remember these words. He said, "Heath, you've got to make a decision." And I was ready. I was ready to get on a bus and just go somewhere else and leave it all behind, because I was fearful. And see, fear paralyzes you. That's what it does. And the opposite of fear is faith, because faith moves you to action. And so I can't explain what happened in that session that day, but at some point after he said, "Heath, you've got to make a decision," he goes, "I back you, whatever it is, but where you are is not going anywhere, and you've got to get out of this situation, out of this pit." And a peace came over me, and all of those fears were gone. And I don't remember how I came to that conclusion, but I do remember the day that I went to Emily and I said, "I've got to make a decision. I've got to do something different." And she said, "Why don't you get a day shift? Why don't you just change your job situation?" So I went to my job situation, told my boss, and she gave me the opportunity. I went to the day shift. The lights came on. The birds started singing. Then I took Emily on a date to Sonic. We got cherry limeades. And it was in my red Dodge that I looked over at her and I said, "Emily, I'm ready to have children. And I'm going to apply to graduate school." And in a month, all of that was happening. And so God changed my life and put me on a new path. And that was a giant that I was facing. My life could look drastically different. And now I have 4 children. I have a job. I finished graduate school. I've been married for 15 years this December. And I'm so thankful that I sought the counsel of the wise people in my life, and I followed their advice, and I went and sought godly counseling. But I'm going to talk about a different giant back in 1 Samuel. And so let me set up the story for you. This is about David and Goliath. And all the things I'm going to talk about today are the things that we talk about in RAs. Mostly they deal with fighting and stuff that boys want to hear about. So this is about David and Saul in Samuel 1, chapter 17, verses 31 and 49. That's what I'm going to read to you. But first, I'm going to set the stage. So the Israelites are in the promised land, and the Philistines are coming for battle. And they're in a land, and I can't pronounce the names of them, so I won't try. But there's 2 hills or 2 mountains, and the Israelites are on one side and the Philistines are on the other. And in battle, you want the upper ground. You want the high ground. Okay? So for anyone to attack, they would have to go down the hill, across the valley, and fight uphill. And they know that that's not good. So neither one of them goes out and charges. And so they're at a standstill. You got Israelites on one side and the Philistines on the other. And Saul is the king of Israel, and he's got his whole army out there. And here's just a side note. There's only 2 swords in all of Israel right now. Saul has one, and his son has the other. I mean, they have like shovels and sticks, and that's about it. But the Philistines, they have all the armor. I've read where it said that that culture, that society, they ushered in the Bronze Age. So later on, when we hear about Goliath and all the stuff he has, he's got all the armor. He's got all the best weapons. So, and so for 40 days, the champion of the Philistines, Goliath, comes out and he challenges the whole army of Israel, and he cusses them bad. I mean, insults them. And he's a giant. He's over 9 foot tall. His armor is huge. His chainmail weighs 125 pounds. You can go back and read this in the verses before what I'm going to read. And he is intimidating. Nobody wants to fight him because nobody believes that they have what it takes to win. And looking from the outside in, they don't. I mean, he's a giant. We'll read later about how long he's been fighting. But what they practiced in that time was called champion warfare. Because when you went to take over another culture, you didn't want everybody to die. You wanted to capture them and make them your own, make them your slaves. So to preserve life, they would just send out their best person. You can see this in the movie Troy when Achilles fights Boagrius. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but it's a great scene. And Boagrius, he is huge. I mean, he's a monster. And I know Achilles, whatever, but anyways... That's what it was like. So if you want to see what that was like, go look at that movie and see what that was like. And then the winner takes all. And the whole army that loses, they lay down their weapons and become the servants to the other side. So that's the stage. That's where we are. But let me talk about one other character, David. So David is the youngest, and I think he has like 7 or 8 older brothers. He might be the 8th. And his daddy's name's Jesse. And Jesse has told this boy to go watch over his sheep. So David is a shepherd in Bethlehem. And David does what his dad says. And shepherds, I don't know if you know this or not, I know in the nativity scene, you know, the shepherds become important, but at that time shepherds were not thought of very highly at all. That was the lowest job that anybody could have, all right? Because sheep apparently aren't very smart, and it wasn't a really prestigious job, all right? So you're outside, you smell bad, and so David, the youngest, has been given this job. Go watch the sheep. But what we'll find out later is that in the small things, in the seemingly meaningless tasks of David's life, God was using that to prepare him for something that he would do later. So men, your day-to-day tasks, your job, your struggles, the things that you are doing that may seem minuscule or mundane or unimportant, you have no idea how God is going to use you later on. All right, so let's read 1 Samuel 17, verse 31. So what David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a boy. And he has been a fighting man from his youth." See, right there should tell you, I mean, the odds against David. I mean, he was a boy, and this guy's been a warrior since he was a youth. He has proven himself in battle. This obstacle, from the outside looking in, is impossible. And everybody in Israel knows it. But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of those because he has defied the armies of the living God." Listen to this. Verse 37. "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." See, David already knows that it wasn't him and his special skills or his good looks or anything that got him anywhere out of those situations, but it was God that delivered him. And later on, you'll realize that it's not man that can do this. But it's God through man. And that's what gives David the confidence to face this giant that to everyone else seems an impossible task. So Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic and put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I am not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over, saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. And he said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. See, you think we're just in RAs talking about stuff, but this is what we read. We read this stuff. Verse 45, David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day, the Lord will hand you over to me. See, he doesn't even take his own skill set. Like, he's ready for battle. He went armored up. Okay? He's carrying a lot of stones. But he even tells Goliath, he says, the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. See, the purpose that David is pointing out is that not that I am going to beat you and I'm going to win, but I'm going to beat you and the world is going to know about it. So when we win victories, when we go through battles and we come out victorious, it's not just for us. My own life, I have seen that the battle that I fought and the victory that was given to me by God, because it was nothing I was going to do about it, has had a generational effect. My children are here because through God, I was able to overcome my fear of all that. And David knows the same thing. He knows that the whole world is going to find out who the real God is. Verse 47, all those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Verse 48, as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag, taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. And you can read on what David does, but David's victorious, all right? And he later on becomes king. So in case you missed something, I want to point them out very clearly. They're practicing champion warfare because Israel is faced with circumstances that none of them believe that they can win. So a champion, a shepherd from Bethlehem, he comes to do for them what they could not do for themselves. The gospel is on every page of the Bible. That is the gospel because we are faced with an enemy, and alone we do not have what it takes. So God, he sent the good shepherd from the town of Bethlehem as a boy, right? And he grew up and he lived and he died and he was raised from the dead to defeat sin and to put death to death so that we could be victorious. So I want to talk about a different fight, a more current fight. And we're going to go to Ephesians 6. So I've said all that to say this. If you don't feel like you're in the fight, you may not be in it. In chapter 6 of Ephesians, this is Paul. This is many years later. Paul is writing to the church of Ephesus. And he describes in verse 6, or chapter 6, verse 10, he talks about the armor of God. And he starts with finally. But when he says finally, you got to realize that he's already been talking for many chapters ahead of time. This is a long letter that he's writing to this church. And so to talk about chapter 6, we've got to talk about chapter 5. And in chapter 5, he talks about three relationships that we are supposed to fight for. And there's three relationships, and you should go read this for yourselves. Those three relationships are husbands and wives, parents and children, and then employees and employers. It talks about bond servants and masters, but in today's time, that would be employees and employers. And he describes those relationships and how they should be. And so I'm going to briefly touch on each one. Husbands and wives, we should mutually submit to one another. When you hear the word submit, it might sound a little weird. But what submission is, it's nothing more than an opportunity to lead. Because men, it's in our DNA. All right? We want to lead. We want to go out and to fix things. We may not know how to do it, but that's what we were designed to do. We want to do these things. But God knew it wasn't good for us to be alone. So when you hear submit, think, allow the other to lead. That's all it is. And so we should try to outdo each other in mutual submission and in love and in service towards one another. That's what marriage is. The second one is parents and children. It says, children, obey your parents. And parents, do not exasperate your children. I have a son named Eli. He's 7 years old. And I didn't realize this, but when I look at him, I see my older brother, TJ. Because I have another son named Ben. And when I see Ben, I think of myself. Because TJ was older than me. And he's 5 years older than me. And he teased me a lot as a child. And eventually I became as big as he was, and the teasing stopped. But for a long time, that relationship was allowed to fester. And I didn't realize it was an issue until I became a dad and I had two sons. And when I see the older son picking on the younger son, I lay the hammer down. And I point at him and I say words, and I'm sharp and I am swift. And I hold Ben and I push Eli back. But I shouldn't do that to Eli. It's not fair. He's 7. And so Emily has called me out on that as a good wife and as a loving parent. And she tells me often, he's not TJ. He's Eli. And so I have to remind myself to love Eli because he's got a big heart. And he loves his brother. And he's such a servant. And when I ask him to do things, he runs. He runs to do them. But dads, your words have so much weight. Be careful how you use your words to your wife and to your children. And the last one is employees and employers. When we work, we're supposed to work as we're working to God. You know? And then employers are supposed to be kind to their employees, all right? So it's these three relationships where you have so much opportunity to have issues come up, to tear you down. And so it's out of these three relationships that Paul writes Ephesians 6. And so this is the war that we're fighting. And it's not against flesh and blood. It's a spiritual warfare. And so I'm going to read you Ephesians 6, starting in 10. It says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For your struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces." It's a big army that we're fighting against. "Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. After you've done everything to stand, stand firm." All right, they're redundant there. It says stand three times. So men, we are called to stand up, to fight, okay? "Stand firm then, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist." See, the belt of truth holds everything together. And at RAs, we made belts secretly because I wanted the boys to tuck in their shirt and pull up their pants and wear belts. But we made belts of truth so that they would know that somehow in their hearts they would be reminded that there is truth. And the truth is, alone, we don't have what it takes. Alone, we are like Israel on a hillside facing an obstacle that is greater than our circumstances. But God, strong and mighty, He reached down for us and He saved us. And He sent someone to fight for us when we couldn't fight for ourselves. And so that's the gospel. So we need to hold that truth around our waists and hold on to it always. Because the truth is, you can't fight without pants. So you need pants on. All right? Continuing on, armor of God. "With the breastplate of righteousness in place." See, the breastplate, I don't know if you've seen Ben-Hur. You should. It's really good. Or Gladiator. Their breastplates looked good. I mean, they were chiseled. Even though those guys weren't chiseled, they looked chiseled. And so the breastplate of righteousness just means a right standing with God. So if we have a breastplate of righteousness on, that means when God looks at you, when He looks at me, He doesn't see sinner, 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 scar, scar, hurt, hang up, fear. He sees perfect. Because I have confessed that Jesus is my Lord. I have admitted that I'm a sinner. I believe that He is the Son of God and He died for my sins and was raised from the grave. And I confess Him as Lord of my life. That means I follow Him. That kind of goes back to the submit to one another. You think it's weird to submit to somebody? If you're a Christian, you submitted to Jesus. You submit. You say, I'm not going to do what I want to do. I'm going to do what you do. And not the same, but like that, that's how we submit to one another. Not what I want to do, but what do you need? So men, when you love your wives and you submit, look at what she needs and just do it. And that can mean sweeping the floor or doing the dishes. It can mean whatever she needs. Like, you do it. Because that's what we're called to do. So the breastplate of righteousness means we have a right standing with God. And when God looks at us, He doesn't see us, but He sees His perfect Son who covers us. So it has to be in place. Verse 15, "And with your feet fitted in the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace." We need shoes of peace. Because shoes take you places. And wherever you go, men, do we bring peace? Or do we bring chaos? Do I bring peace into my house when I come home? Or do I bring frustration and fatigue and resentment and tiredness? Or do I bring peace? We should be ambassadors of peace. And you know how you create peace? You say you're sorry. And men, we should go first in being the chief apologizers in our families. When I hurt Eli, I had to ask him for forgiveness. And he didn't understand it. But I had to show him, and I had to do this before I came up here because otherwise I'd be a hypocrite. But I had to show him that I'm not perfect, that I fail, and that I'm sorry for my failure. So do we bring peace where we go? In addition to all this, take up your shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Again, back to Gladiator, back to 300. That shield. King Leonidas, he said, the shield goes from neck to knees. You got to pick up your shield. All right? And it wasn't just one person. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Gladiator, when they're in the arena and Maximus is there and the chariot starts circling them. And the point of the theme was that the chariots win. It was like the Battle of Gath or something. I can't remember. But Maximus knows what's coming. He knows they're going to circle and they're going to shoot arrows. Watch the movie. They're going to shoot arrows and they'll pick everybody off. So he forms a wall and everybody pulls their shields together and they form like a turtle shell. See, the shield of faith is a perfect example because fear paralyzes you and faith moves you to action. And when the chariot got close, he called out a command and all the shields shifted and they created a ramp and he flipped over the chariot and they won the day. So you can't fight alone. Your shield alone may not be enough. I've said it before that when you're alone, you're like the gazelle on the prairie. And that lion who seeks to kill, steal, and destroy us, he's going to pick you off. So you've got to have some other people in your life. And together, you got to form that shell. So, man, I'm going to call you out. Do you have someone in your life? And it's not your wife. And it's not your mother. You need to have some men. You need a band of brothers. And I'm just repeating the things I've heard, but what I heard was that a band of brothers is like a retirement account. If you wait till you need it, it's too late. So you take up your shield of faith. It's verse 17. Take the helmet of salvation. See, the helmet protects your head. You can't lose your head. If you do, it's over. But you can't lose your salvation. You can't. Because it was given to you. It was a gift. You did nothing to earn it. So therefore, you can't lose it. But differently said, the helmet protects you, protects your eyes. All right? Men, we need to protect our eyes. We need to protect what we look at. Because it goes into our head and into our heart. And it never leaves. So protect yourself. Put on your helmet of salvation. Verse 17, take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. This Bible, it was given to us. It was a gift. All right? When Jesus, when he was baptized and he went into the desert, you know who was there? The devil. And Jesus was tempted. The thing about temptation is it's tempting. You know how Jesus fought against it? Every time. See, the devil, he's hungry. He's like a roaring lion prowling around looking for someone to devour. And he knows that if he can take out the man, then the fallout is potentially generational. He's persistent, but he's not original. There's three ways. There's three sins that the devil uses to take us out. It's lust of the flesh, it's the lust of the eyes, and it's the pride of life. It's lust of the flesh, what feels good, lust of the eyes, I want what I don't have, and the pride of life, I'm bigger than I really am. I don't need your help. I've got this. So that's how he tempted Jesus. And every time he came at Jesus, Jesus said, it is written. It is written. So men, We need some "it is written" in our lives, in your heart, in your mind. And I didn't think of this. I was led to this, but this is what we do in our family. At night we pray with Natalie Ann. And we pray Psalms 139:14. It says, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." Because one day, the world is going to try to label her and tell her how she should look, how she should act, how she should feel. But I want her to know, deep in her heart, without hesitation, that she is fearfully and wonderfully made just as she is. And with Eli, we're different. With Ben, we're different. Mimi, she bought a sign and we hung it up in Eli's room. It's probably from Hobby Lobby. And it's Joshua 1:9. It says, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be dismayed, for your Lord God is with you wherever you go. Be strong and courageous." The reason Joshua said that, because he was weak and afraid. They were weak and afraid. And the reason I want to say this, this little book was given to me, I think, when Natalie Ann was born. Pete may have given it to me, I don't know, but it was John Eldridge. It's a little book. It talks about how to be a daddy to boys and girls and how they're different. And it says that girls, they have one question that needs to be answered by their daddy. And that question is, am I lovely? Am I worth fighting for? So husbands, that's the question your wife is still asking. Am I lovely? Am I worth fighting for? Because her biggest fear, according to this book, which, you know, a man wrote it and I believe it, it feels right. Her biggest fear is abandonment. And boys, their biggest question they want answered by their daddy is, "Daddy, do I have what it takes?" And I didn't realize it was real until one day Eli, he's riding his bicycle. And we're praising Eli. You know, no training wheels. He's good. It's like a year ago. And little Ben comes up on his training wheels. We've been talking to Eli. "Eli, you're such a good rider. Way to go." Because we live on rocks and it's not even, so it's really difficult. So if you actually can ride on our driveway, you are a good rider. And here comes Ben on his little training wheels. He stops and he goes, "Daddy, am I a good rider?" And of course, you just cry and bend down. You go, "Yeah, buddy, you're a good rider." And he was like 4 years old. He didn't know anything. But he knew he wanted that question answered. And so it's real. I needed that question answered. That's where all my fear came from. Because I didn't think I had what it took. And the truth is, I don't. Separated from God, I don't have what it takes. Men, there's many other verses we could talk about. So we need some "it is written" in our life. Because this battle is real and it's persistent. And like I said earlier, if you're not in it, you're going to be. You've either coming out, you're in it, or you're going in. So this is your homework. Everybody, read Ephesians 6 every day. Read it until you don't have to read it anymore. Until you can literally feel like you understand what the armor of God is and you can put it on and you can get yourselves dressed daily. Because I feel like as a man, this is my war cry. This is 1 Corinthians 16:13-14. It says, "Be watchful. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men." Another way says, "Be men of courage. Be strong." Not in your fake macho strength, but in the strength that the Lord gives you. "Be strong. Let all that you do be done in love." So men, that's what we're called to do. We're called to be warriors. We're called to fight, not to give up ground, but to stand firm, to fight. And alone, you don't have it. Without God, you're going to be crushed. But God gives us everything we need. Priscilla Shire is writing these books. She's already written them. She tours with Beth Moore. And she is an amazing woman of God. And I think she has 3 or 4 sons. And she knew that they needed something to read that was biblical, that was focused, and that would capture their attention. And she couldn't find it. So she wrote a series of books. And it's, they're fun to read. So I read them. We were halfway through the first book. And it's called The Prince Warriors. And it's this unbelievable world of strange things that are happening. And it's all based on the armor of God. And I am learning things in myself through these books about the armor of God. God has given you everything you need. Do not rest on your own understanding. Follow the armor. All right? So you got to put it on. So men, I don't know how to end this. Men, we're gonna sing and we're going to pray. And then Mr. Gary has something for us to come down front for. When do you want him to come down front? Now or later? Okay. So later you're going to come down front. But you can come down now. This altar is open. This is a church family. We are in this fight together. So if you have something to say to someone, if you have forgiveness to ask for, if you got a declaration to confess, to say, I am going to stand now and I'm going to fight for my family and I'm going to be the man of God that God has called me to be, this day, I'm doing it. I want you to come down. Put your shame aside. There is no condemnation. And condemnation, we said it before, it was in the Psalms, there is no condemnation. Condemnation is nothing more than a builder's term. Buildings that are unfit for use, they're condemned. They put a sign on it. Nobody go in. Unsafe. Can't use it. We're going to tear it down. Because Jesus died for you, because all sin is forgiven, you, no matter what you've done, you are not condemned. God has a use for you. And it may not be easy, and it may not be quick. It may happen many years from now, but you have no idea how He's going to use you and what it can mean for generations to come. So don't feel that way. So let's sing, let's pray, and let's come. Thank you.